On today's episode of the Slide In Podcast, we talk about which hand should you reel with, animating flies when using long spay rods, just kind of animating flies in general, micro flies that are now available on slidein.com, and fighting fish. A couple quick notes here. The first episode of season two of The Fly Show came out. Kelly, Jake, and I are down on the Henry's Fork. Super fun show, a couple big fish in there. If you haven't seen it, go check it out now. Let us know what you think. Leave comments. We're going to have a bunch of good shows coming, so get ready for that. And this show is brought to you by the Kelly Inn, which resides in West Yellowstone, just a few hundred feet from the National Park's entrance. While they're open year-round, the shoulder seasons, April, May, September, October, even November, are the perfect time to visit. The Madison side of the park is now open year-round, which means you can fish streamers at dawn, be back in time for a hearty hot breakfast with the family. One of the best parts about the shoulder seasons is being able to explore the park while the crowds are light and the animals are active. The streamer bite tends to be more consistent during these months as well. The famous Bob Jacklin Casting Pond sits right next door. There are plenty of ground floor rooms so you can walk straight in with your fly rod after a long day on the water. And when you're ready to relax, unwind in the indoor pool and hot tub. Book your trip at www.yellowstonekellyinn.com. Use promo code SLIDE2025. Once again, that's SLIDE2025 for 15% off your stay. The Kelly Inn, family-friendly comfort, world-class fishing, all in one spot. Thank you to the Kelly Inn. Once again, use that code SLIDEIN2025 to book your stay. It helps them, it helps us. Appreciate y'all. Enjoy. All right. Welcome back to another episode of the Slide In Podcast. I'm Braden Anderson. That's Kelly Gallup.
Welcome back.
This is episode 46, if I'm not mistaken. And I got to start. We got a couple gifts from folks we got to talk about today. One of which is this really cool old reel, a Fluger Medalist. And I believe this is the same guy that sent you the vest, right? Was his name Alex?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's got to be the same guy.
He is a Fluger freak.
Yeah.
He said that's how he said he found the vest searching. He buys all of them, so he has parts forever.
Right. Yeah. So I got to read this note he sent.
It's got a Michigan line.
I thought it was great. Yeah. Exactly. That's what Chuck walked in. He goes, huh? Beads. What was that? Did you hear that?
That was me.
Oh, got it. All right. Jumpy. He says, Braden, I purchased this early 1930s Fluger Medalist 1495 with the intention of using it on a light trout spay. Here in the Ozarks, I realized that using a single hander with a commando head will suit me just fine. When I decide to fish that way, 1495 is too big for the shorter fiberglass rods I fish, so I think you will be able to put this gem to use. It may look like shit, I think
in a
good way.
It's a gift for Braden.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not for sucks. You. You don't even know what it is.
He says, I know a little bit about it. Only from Kelly.
That is so cool.
So he said, it looks like shit, but he thinks in a good way. And I've completely disassembled it, cleaned it, and made it ready for another 90 years of use. I'm not sure if you know about these American classic reels, but this being an early model, it has the round guide and all metal parts. It's also only right-hand wind, so if that bothers you, sorry, not sorry. This is an American classic with what I'm guessing hundreds, if not thousands, of fish under its belt with a ton of mojo. I'd love for you to use this on a light trout spay. The previous owner marked the spool GF. This could be name initials, it could mean great fishing, or it could be get fucked. All probably applicable in its life of use. I put backing at a bunch of 25-pound Berkeley Big Game for running line on it, but you can rip that all off if it doesn't fit your knees. I'm sure Kelly knows these reels and can help you figure out how to adjust the drag and so forth. And he signs it, sit when you shit and put your carts away. Alex. So Alex, thank you. Really appreciate it, man. It's so cool.
I must miss
that. Yeah, I liked that. I liked how he signed that. But I'll definitely throw that on a trout spay and going to try to put a couple.
I'm curious about this. I've got dozens of these. But the drag is back here and the line tenders on this side, so the drag's in front, and I've never seen that.
But it's definitely a right hand.
Well, it's set up to right hand.
Yeah.
And you could always flop that and change it, but I've never seen the drag with this in the front. I've always, like all mine, I want to move them, but I can't.
Yeah.
Right? And so this, well, I could, but the drag would be out there. I don't know. some of the first plastic ever used in the world right there on that handle. I can't remember what it's called, Pyrex or some shit.
Well, very cool, Alex. Very cool. Thank you. Definitely will be getting some use. I sent a picture to my family of this because I thought it was really cool. And my brother said, "Are you even going to fish that thing?" I said, "Absolutely. These things want to be fished.
You can't hurt them."
Well, and I don't like putting stuff on the wall. Like, you know, I don't really believe that inanimate objects have feelings. But if they did, they'd want to be used, right?
Pretty deep for killing.
Well, you know that. This is a total aside, but that I remember one time.
But I do fish my Bougalets because Gordon gave them to me, and it's cool. I have to.
It's cool.
When I fished with Howard, I had that.
Yeah.
No, I didn't. I had a St. George on, and it was just rattle trap, right? Yeah. But I had to fish it.
So maybe I agree with you.
So I guess first time, huh? So I think that, I don't know how much run we'll get out of this question, but which hand should you reel with? Because this is set up for right hand, and until what, the 70s, almost every?
70s was too, well, you
could always. We were talking about this with Parker and the guys.
You could always, well, some reels, because like that, because of the line tender, you couldn't. Like, you know, Hardys and stuff that were all set up for that line guard to be on one side.
Yeah.
And there was no flopping drags. But you've always, those you can move around. But the line tender's on the wrong side. That's why I've never seen one with the tender over there. Now the drag's in the front. It's supposed to be in the back, right? But it wasn't until the 70s. I'm pretty certain, and I could be wrong, but the first one I remember was Ross came left hand. You know, you could have it left hand. Mm-hmm. But a lot of reels had no options for a long time.
Right.
It wasn't until the mid-70s where maybe even 80s before you could flop them. You know, they didn't have that little spool and that little line tender in the middle. But, yeah, there was a lot of reels, they just came that way. That's just the way you had to get used to it. And because of that spool thing. But I'm not sure. Probably I would guess mid-70s, maybe right in there. I don't remember. I know Ross was one of the first. And Ross came out with a reel like that and had the same detent, Delron detent, where your engagement for that little spring that's making the noise going tick, 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 right? It goes around, it hits, you know, there's a detent and it stops in that. And that getting stuck there is what engages the drag, the tension, right? Mm-hmm. When you come off of the whole click paw reels where you had just flop your click paws to make a different set, which didn't do shit.
Right.
I mean, a little bit, but not much. But when they first came out, Ross first came out, they were silent. And then they did the detent with this. And everybody would pick them up and go, it sounds like a Fluger. Nobody wanted they didn't want their shit to sound like a Fluger. We're too cool. We got to get away from the Flugers. And I did the same thing. I did this. I gave, thankfully, my first rod, I gave to Billy, one of my best friend, Billy Robinson. And he kept it and gave it back to me years later. I was just too cool for it, right?
Yeah.
I think I had an article in Fly Fisherman or some shit, so I got rid of all my old junk. And most of it was Flugers and junk like that, which wasn't junk. And then I tried to get it back from everybody.
Yeah.
And Billy gave me back the rod. And I don't know, but it was the first HMG graphite. And I bought a blank. But the Ross, I think it was their second year or something like that. I could be wrong on this one, but they went to tripled that or more. So that when it went around, it went instead of.
When you're actually reeling
just,
it. Because this has four
classic.
Clicks.
Yeah.
That has four clicks for per rotation.
Just such a classic, you know? It's like. And so that was the sound that you got
once they
changed it
or whatever.
Yeah, it's just those little detents in there.
Yeah.
And this thing's in pretty damn good shape though.
Well, I think
nobody fell with it and bent it. That's pretty rare.
Yeah.
You know. Such a great noise.
Yeah, it's cool.
That's what I fish all summer in July during Rules Week.
Right.
It's either gotta be a pre-1940s Hardy or Fluger.
That's what you had up between the lakes when we filmed that beta show, right?
Yeah, everything. Yes, I can't believe I didn't get good mojo from that.
Fish, I hope they care. Mm. They might not, but I hope they do.
It's possible.
So in terms of like which hand should you reel with? I think the answer is it doesn't really matter what you like.
Well,
I grew up fishing right hand reels. My first fly was like that.
It's probably because that's all they had. hand-me-downs. I mean, if you're fishing hand-me-downs, but why would you have a...
No, I got a, whatever the entry-level Sage rod was, I think at my maybe sixth or seventh birthday.
You mean you reeled with your right hand?
I reeled with my right hand, yeah.
I have no idea why.
It's just, that's...
Sage, whew. Unless somebody did it, just reversed it, but...
I don't know, but that's what it was, and that's what I grew up doing, and then I came out here, and Jeremy made fun of me, so I switched, and now I can do both.
I think it's whatever you grew up with. I mean, yeah. You know, you can do what you do, but I told you the story about fishing with Harry Lemire and giving him shit about, nobody gave Harry shit. He's like talking to John Wayne and Jesus at the same time. I was like, but I said to him, why do all you guys use those hardy, loud, clicky reels with no drags? And says, and why is it on the right? Is this some kind of cult thing with you guys? Which, pretty ballsy for me to say something like that to Harry, because he was just truly the as big a legend as you can get. And he says, well, young man, I hated that. I was like in my 40s. And he said, have you ever seen what happens when you put a drag on a fish? I said, yeah, I reel him in. He goes, no, it runs away from you downstream. I figured that out in a hurry. That's where the whole free line spooling.
Yeah.
And so not putting tension on them when they're going down. And of course, their reels didn't have drags, right? Barely. I mean,
right.
They had some, but I mean, shit, they weren't pulling anything down. And then I cast. So I was telling you, I think I cast for 4.5 hours. And one of my first days ever, single hand, you know, 9.5 foot, 8 weight RPL. Sages, and I forget what my reel was, and I just, you're out there up to your sack, and you're just humping these big casts as long as you can, right? And so, you know, it's just, everything's a work. You're too deep, and you're trying to keep your elbows up, and your line off the water, the line's all piled all over, and you're just working your ass off trying to get these casts out, right? And then about 4.5 hours in, I cracked this fish, and I start fight, you know, and it's a big fish, and it's just beating the shit out of me. And it came in, finally, and my hand started spasming so much that I had to quit fishing. And I was like, but when he said, you know, what happens to the drag? And then he, on the second part of what I had asked him, he goes, and you'll figure it out.
About the right hand?
Yeah. Really? He didn't say nothing. He just says, he says, they run away from your drag, and you'll figure it out. And it was about the, and my hand was like, oh shit. I went back and changed every reel I had with me into a right hand retrieve because, you know, you never cast that much for everything I did. And the rivers aren't small and you weren't hucking stuff. And you've got a reprieve to switch to your left hand.
Yeah.
Trout reels, you know, trout bat, you know.
You shouldn't even really be using your reel that much with trout.
No, you really aren't. And even if you do, I mean, it's just more convenient. It's more about getting it back on the reel, but to whoever. I know a lot of people that still fish right-hand retrieves.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of steelhead trout guys that they've done it their whole life. So switch over. My dad did it. And a lot of old guys still do it.
I liked what Parker said.
Older than me. Like there's two left that aren't dead.
I liked what Parker said when he went down to fish in the Keys with Nicholas in Florida. I'm not sure if they're in the Keys. And he said he got down there and all of the reels are right-hand. And Parker goes, so what am I going to do? And Nicholas said, you'll figure it out.
Yeah.
And then Parker, after that, he figured it out, right? It's not that hard. It's just doing this, but with your other hand. And Parker came back, and all of his guide rods are set up on left hand. And when his clients go, hey, I actually do right hand, he goes, well, if you're using the reel, we probably screwed something up anyways.
Yeah. So, and you'll figure it out.
Yeah, you'll figure it out.
I have watched people. There are two things about drags that, like, when I was working on my reel with Hardy designing that, I have to have either no sound in, but it has to be a completely different from a guide perspective. And I don't know if I never did figure it out my whole life. I mean, all the years guiding, people get a big fish and they will reel backwards. At night was the worst when you're night fishing.
They go backwards, they're just letting line up.
It happens here. I've seen it 100 times on the boat. Yeah. They'll hook up and they'll get going like this, and you can hear the reel going wrong way, wrong direction, right? And so
the different sounds help.
Oh, yeah, it has to be just like this. On a Fluger, you could tell right away.
You know.
But you, I seen it hundreds and hundreds of times where they get freaked out and reel backwards. And so with my Hardy, I didn't think anybody that would be fishing one would do that. But I said, but I really need it. I need it to be silent one way or the other. I don't care which it is. Right. I'd rather hear it, you know, I'd rather not hear you reeling and hear the drag taking off. You know, gives you something to judge how you're in a boat, you know, you're rowing, you're with a client, whatever, you got two people, and you got it, suddenly you got somebody's got a fish on, it's going crazy, and you got to secure things before, you can't just jump up and tell the person, you got to be able to do that blindfolded, that, no, you're reeling back, oh, I got it, and you'll, and so, I like to hear how fast that line's going out. Mm-hmm. Is it,
you know, absolutely racing.
Is it or, in the other yeah. side of the river right now? Right. Do I, you know, you just, it gives you a way to help them reel the fish
some
in.
More without, data.
Right? Yeah, for you as a guide, I guess I won't drop anchor because it's 100 yards out already. You know, right. I'll take off running.
Yeah.
You know, but there's no right or wrong, though. I've fished with a guy one time that hand-lined everyone in and he got every fish in.
That's awesome.
Huh?
That's
there, awesome. Did I that?
Yeah.
Hit that one fly. It was the craziest shit I ever saw in my life.
Just drop the rod and pull him in? Yeah,
threw the rod.
Threw it.
Yeah. He was a very wealthy guy, and he threw the rod down. And he was from another country. I don't remember what. His English was pretty, it was really good, actually. But I always wondered if he just didn't grow up handlining.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, he never, ever broke a fish off.
Well, what?
And he put the biggest cutty I've ever seen in the Snake River system in the boat.
Oh, shit.
27.
Oof.
I've never even heard of a fish that big. Handlined it. Should have got disqualified. I
mean, did he win?
No, he was out of the county. He wasn't even supposed to be fishing.
Geez. No, I remember
a great
talking
guy
to
him. He was really funny. He was also, because he lost his fly like an hour in. I'm like, dude, just keep fishing. Just don't run into me. Don't hook my line. Because if he hits me, I'm out. Right?
Right.
And he got that giant, and he got it to the edge of the boat, and the line was, it's a Koffler boat. All full of nicks, and he's just running the leader up and down, drops it in the boat.
The old boat flip.
Oh, God, it's unbelievable. And then next day, another guy had him, and he came up, and he's asking me, Big Mike, and he says, you guys catch fish yesterday? Yeah. Anything weird go on? Well, and the other part of it was that we killed the fish, but we let it go. So you don't really know if it died or not, but it had two gills cut right in half, and
he was bleeding pretty hard.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've seen him live. So I pushed him back in. And so, but they.
It was a long time ago, the statute of limitations.
Yeah, it's got to be. But he says, anything weird happen? I thought, Ben gave it up. And I said, not that I can recall. Anything about landing fish? No. Anything about the way you landed fish? I says, oh, the hand over hand? I think he said 16 fish.
No shit.
On the South Fork.
Yeah.
And never lost one.
That's impressive. I mean,
you ever watched the guys in Chile with the kids handlining?
I remember we were talking in Chile down about that because we saw those kids under the bridge handlining.
They don't lose fish.
When it's your dinner,
yeah,
you care a little more.
Yeah. That's what I always wondered about the guy, if he just grew up someplace where they handlined.
Right.
Well, a lot of guys in the salt handline.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, I don't know.
That's cool.
No right or wrong, I suppose. Which hand to use?
So no right or wrong. I mean, do whatever makes you feel good. And if you get in a guide boat and they don't have it set up, just like try to reel with your other hand. It's really not that hard. All right.
But so you will reach. You will get fumble. I do it still to this day when I on my right hands. I go out and thing I do is reach for it. Oh gosh, shit! Gotta switch hands.
Well, that's where I have most of my dry fly rods are now right hand and
should
streamers.
Should come easy for you because you all right hand with your space stuff.
All my space stuff's left handed.
It is?
Yes.
No, you just got done telling Parker it was all right.
No.
Oh, you just got used to...
I grew up doing right hand. My first like three reels were all right hand. Because the first one I got was right hand, and then my dad's buddy gave me two reels that were both right hand. So I just learned doing that, and then Jeremy made fun of me when I was going to order a right hand retriever. And I was like, really? Is left that much better? He goes, no, but you could do both. I'm like, well, that sounds kind of cool. So I ordered one, and then... Now all my streamer and space stuff is left hand. All of my dry fly stuff is right hand. And what that means is I can never find the damn reel. So I just fumble around and then strip the fish in. That doesn't work so good with steelhead. But all right, next question comes from a guy named Jacob Olson. He sent me this on Instagram. He said, Braden, question for the podcast. I'm looking to get into the trout spay game, but don't want to carry multiple streamer rods on the river. What are your and Kelly's thoughts about carrying around a heavier, stiffer trout spay rod and fishing streamers opportunistically, jerk strip, pull the rope, etc., as well as swinging the runs? This may be what you're already doing and irrelevant, but would love an answer regardless. So this kind of got my brain ticking. I sent Jacob a really long message back, so sorry for that one. But from my opinion, I'm curious to hear what Kelly has to say about this. There is not a do-it-all tool out there. If you want to throw spay rods and swing runs, do that. Spay rods don't work for stripping upstream. Like if you're going to throw upstream and strip down, I've tried it a lot. It's really hard. And I've been trying to develop methods for throwing Kelly's flies on spay rods and animating them, and trying to do any rod work with them. It's really tough. And the reason behind this that I've come up with is that your reel is very far away from your hand, right? And that's your counterbalance to try to, you know, have that rod sit level in your hand. And when that reel's really far back from your hand, it's, I'm not a physicist, okay, so bear with me here, but it, with your weight being further away from your hand, what I likened it to is my fifth grade baseball coach, Phil Ronier, used to make us hold bats out with a straight arm to work on your forearm strength, right? And it's really easy to hold a bat out when you grab the middle of the bat. Yeah. As soon as you hold the handle of the bat, all that weight's further away. And it's some pendulum physics. I don't know what it is, but it's much heavier out there. Well, he told us to tell our grandmothers to do that so they don't get the saggy arms. I thought that was mean. Getting back to this.
Wouldn't be working her triceps anyway.
Yeah, well, like this.
Sorry, Phil.
Yeah.
Wouldn't matter.
So when you have that reel further back, it's a lot heavier, and then it's swing weight. It takes a more to move it. So when your hand's close to the reel, you've got a properly weighted system, a short rod, you know, a 9-footer, an 8.5-footer. It's really easy to animate the fly with your rod tip. As soon as you extend that system, it's much harder to recover. It takes longer to get that rod back, being that, you know, you're longer rod, more weight away from your hand. It's just a much clunkier thing. So I practically gave up on animating swung flies with the rod tip unless I'm simply kind of rod up and jerking it without stripping behind. It's a slower retrieve, and then you can pull the rope. Pulling the rope works great, but I don't think there is a, you know, one rod quiver that works for...
Oh, I thought he was saying he wanted to bring two.
No, he's looking, he said he doesn't want to carry multiple rods.
Oh, okay, I see what you're saying.
So what are your thoughts?
What I wrote
on
down is length of rod, and the reason you can't animate a fly, I mean, it's simple. The rod gives. And so, and then there's all that recoil, and you're never going to keep tight with that. I said that once, and the Canadians just beat the hell out of me about you can't animate a fly with a, I don't know when I did it, 10 years ago maybe, you can't animate the fly with a rod that gives, right? You can on a static line when you're below you, and you can pick up.
And so you but mean even, like a, even, a softer, slower rod that it, you
yeah,
can
Yeah, if it's a
that,
soft rod, you pick up, the rod bends, you're not doing as much. I mean,
it's like why you can't animate flies with fiberglass rods.
Not as well.
Right.
I mean, there's just give. And that's why I don't like to use 10-foot rods. And it's why, you know, there's just a lot of things. There are physics that come into play to everything you do. Mm-hmm. And if you, you know, some people like to use 8-foot rods for streamers. You know, no problem with that whatsoever. You got a quicker. When you work, if you fish gear anglers understand the weight of the rod, the stiffness of the rod, if you're jigging or if you're working crankbait, everything has a purpose, right? Mm-hmm. One works better than the other.
Yes.
I really offended all the spay guys when I said you can't animate them, even though it's physically just not, you can move the fly. One guy said, you can do this, you can pulse your rod, you can pick it up. But if you think about the physics of 100 feet of line out,
yep.
Shit, it's hard to jig a fly 30 feet from you with an 8-weight broomstick and make the line come up. You've got to pretend that you can make a fly go up and down 100 feet from you. You really need to go out and watch what happens.
I mean, just go out and freaking watch.
So this is where
nothing happens.
There's rigs that you can set up on the spay rod that can help with that. If you run mostly floating tips, a skagit head where you have, you know, a thin mono.
I disagree with you, but
no. But so think about this, right? You've got a floating.
I understand.
Setup.
I know how they're
set up. With a heavy weighted fly. Mm-hmm. Even at distance, if you've got a mono leader and your rod is up in the air, so you're tight to that, you only have, let's say you're running a 15-foot, you know, skagit head, no PST, something, slidein.com, and a short tip, mm-hmm. right? You don't have that much line on the water. You have a direct connection to that line. If you pop that thing, it should, in theory, you should be able to get a little bit of that because it's like you're fishing a short.
I don't think you would get any more out of it having.
I don't think you can get any more, but I think it's possible.
Any more
to get
out of it than if you
do
just pull your line. Yeah, well, you can.
You don't think so?
You can put.
Well, I agree. I agree.
Just take any line you want 30 feet away and lift your rod up.
Right.
Well,
that fly is going to do this.
The line's going to go like this up to your rod, but out here 30 feet, it's just going to pull it. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you're really. I mean, with anything, at best you might get one of these, but you get 40 feet out. Virtually impossible.
No, I agree. I remember down in Chile.
Your flies could be and you know weighted in such a way that you could pick it up, and their paws would drop the head.
Right.
But you guys don't use that on steelhead, and it's like, and I don't. A lot of my flies aren't weighted. So, and I've watched it thousands of times trying to jig it, even in lakes.
Yeah.
It's hard to get it to do this, right? And that's all, and when then you take a 10-foot rod or 11 or 14 or whatever it is, right? And you pull that rod, it's just all give, right?
No, I agree. I think you can move the fly, but it's almost a one-dimensional
move. Move is one thing.
Right, but not
animate jig. When I say animate, I mean make the fly, like when I like to jig a lot.
Right.
I can jig efficiently to about 15 feet. 20's pushing it.
Right.
To where I can actually lift the line and that with a longer leader and get it to follow. But if you're using a sinking line, they're down or any, but even, I don't care what you're doing. If you had pure floater and a leader this long, you got 50 feet from you, pick that up and nothing's happening.
It's going to do this.
It's just following. It's following all the shit on the water.
Right.
I mean, I've tried 1,000 different ways to do it and just, it's physics. It's just after it's so far, if the line's floating. Now you just, it's all on the surface and you're 50 feet back here. And that fly, if you're running a grease line or you're running a float, you know, whatever you're fishing other than maybe a, that's probably why the Dalai Lama is successful.
Right.
Such a shitty fly to cast. What a worthless piece of shit. You can kill yourself with it. But does it jig? It drops like a rock.
It drops like
a rock. So anything you do to it picks it up.
It'll bring it up.
But how many people are swinging 100 feet out with a Dalai? Right,
you have to throw a 17 weight to do that.
Yeah, but I mean, if there was a like the Peanut Envy was intended to do that.
Right,
right. The dungeons aren't intended to do that. They barely do because of all the bulk of the head.
Yeah,
and so the Peanut Envy, or better yet, Russ's original circus peanut, which. You know, I've said 100 times, nobody's ever improved on that fly, but including himself. I still think his first one's the best one ever, but he'd argue with me with that. So, but that fly, actually it's head dipped and anything. So you could pick it up hard like that and accentuate the drop. When you pick it up, there's slack and you put it back as you drop it.
Right.
It's not as much tension on it as when you're pulling on it. So if you jig it hard, up it comes, and then its head will turn and go down. That is not because of the loop on the knot, by the way. It doesn't matter what you're flying, what you've got in there. But the physics are such that the head was heavier than the overall body, didn't do a uniform drop, its head went down.
Right.
Now you jig it and things happen. Even though you're pulling the line long and straight, it's still doing that. But when most flies don't have the ability to, I mean, a Dolly will do it.
Right.
A sheep herder. That's one of why I love that fly. The sheep herders, the way it goes like
the
that.
The Envy does.
Yeah. The Envy
so
does.
That's what I.
The Envy is, though, it's more of a long,
right. But I feel like I can fish that, and I'm sure it doesn't move as much as I think it does, but that's, I use that technique with the long spay rod of, I'll throw it out there and basically get it coming across, and then I'll pop it super hard, which yanks it, and that then it introduces a bunch of slack. Yeah. And that introduction of slack allows it to, in theory, drop.
If the fly's got a... Yeah,
a,
I was talking...
A big enough cone, like...
I agree with that.
You can get it to move a little bit, but it will never be like a single-hand rod at short distance.
Yeah, and at long distance, I think you're pushing... It's just, especially across stream, now you get a belly a little bit, just tension on your line. It's all straightening out a lot more than you think it is. I mean... But it makes you feel good.
And then
I wasn't talking about weighted flies, though.
Gotcha.
When I got all in the trouble, I said, you can't animate a fly with it. It was the same conversation. Those guys, there were three guys, just told me to go to hell and fuck myself. It was like, I said, well, I've actually went out in the water. That's it. For all you geniuses, you need to go out. You just like to write in and just go out and get 100 feet from the fly. And have your buddy do all the shit you think that's happening and watch the damn fly. Yep. You can do it in a swimming pool. I've done it many times. You can throw to the other end of a swimming pool and start with all your fancy ass shit and see how little happens. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that can make it change is a weighted. I mean, it's got to be sufficiently weighted to
do it. Yeah, some pretty serious weight on it to make any
difference. Particularly, you think what we're doing, running, what are you throwing on your space for tippet?
20 to 12. Yeah.
Okay, 12-pound we're running. Yeah. You take this mini take the mini dungeon, not even the micro.
Envy.
I wasn't gonna, or Envy, I mean. And you take that, and that little head, you're going to...
That does almost nothing.
It's going to do this,
the
right?
The big one, you get more drop.
Yeah.
If you really want to get drop,
but then you think about
tungsten.
When, you know, you're talking really big intruder things. Yeah. There's so much mass on them, and there's so much other things on the flies, it doesn't allow the front end to do that,
right?
And so, but he's talking trout spay.
Yep.
I don't think the world's ever going to have that. It just, there's limiting, you can't have an ice ski and a powder ski.
I've been trying for years.
You can't have a wedge and a driver.
I've been trying for years to make your shit work on spay rods. And guess what? I outfish myself 10 to 1 with a single hand rod.
You animate the fly.
Yeah.
You're in control.
And I'm trying to figure out how to animate it. If you guys got suggestions, help me.
And again, a lot of people, it doesn't mean you're not going to catch fish. Doesn't mean the pump's not going to work.
Works.
It's not going to, doesn't mean it's going to depend on the speed of the water too a little bit, but doesn't mean that if you pump that rod up and drop it, that it doesn't do something. It's going I mean, you get, even on a static foot, that's one thing that really amazed me when I was fishing with, it was somebody back east. I was on the Big Manistee, which is a big river, giant fucking river, right? And we're swinging, and I'm down below. That's where I'm watching, and I can't remember who it was that was swinging and pumping the rod, and I'm watching the fly, and it's coming across, right? And it's coming across. I can barely see the fly moving.
Right.
I mean, and it's a bright fly. I can barely see, and I can see him, well, we're doing it on purpose.
Yeah.
I can see him moving the rod, and the fly goes up a little bit, and then it's, ideally, it's breathing as it goes back, right? Well, you got to remember that current's pushing, it's going pretty fast. And it's pushing that thing back, it's wiggling. And you'd see the lie, but there was not as nearly as much. What you do is people do the same shit. They'll get in this barely moving water and they'll fuck with their fly down here. And they'll right at their feet. Oh, look at it go, look at it go. Well, throw it out there 30 feet, get all that pressure on your line.
You have a belly.
Yeah.
Right? And when you pull it, all you do is straighten out the belly a little, right?
A little, but it accentuates, it speeds the fly up, which takes all that pulse thing that you think you're getting, but it all looks great at 5-10 feet.
From it.
But then
so what
100 feet out.
What percentage of movement do you think, and this is obviously a change, there's so many variables involved, what percentage of movement do you think actually makes it to the fly? Like when you're fishing at, and I'm trying to throw spay rods not as far as I used to, like let's say I'm fishing at 50 feet. Right, I've got a basically a 30-foot system, and then I'm a 10-foot rod, and I'm throwing 10 feet of line. You know, this is short rig, right? Mm-hmm. If I pulse it and pull it a foot, do you think 30% of it is going to the fly?
No,
less.
That's what I'm saying. When we were doing it,
it's just because when you introduce bellies,
well, there's a little bit, but even when it got straight below him,
yeah,
he'd pick the rod up, and I don't remember. This is way back when. I don't think it was Walt. I don't think I ever fished Manistee with Walt, but whoever it was fishing was really good, right?
Yeah.
And I just couldn't see much. Now, predates the really movie intrudery type shit, right?
Yeah.
We were still, but no, we were, that's not true. That wasn't very movie, not as big as one. It was a freaking popsicle. That was the other thing I told Harry Lemire when I was on the Kiss BX with him. He said, saw this kid get this monster, giant, I mean, 20 plus. And he goes, what'd he get it on? He said, a popsicle. He goes, it's not a fly, it's a goddamn lure. And I'm like, whoa, easy, big fella.
Easy now.
And he was like, but we were throwing popsicles because it was summer runtime. And we were, and I was just curious, you know, watching the difference between, because I was single hand in a 10 footer, and but we're still running basically the same lines. Back then, you didn't have all the heads and all the different stuff. But we had guys like Walt and Schmidt and guys like that were really cutting and splicing and doing shit way, way, way back. But watching the fly and pumping it and pumping it or pulling it and trying to drop it, it just wasn't doing what you would think it was doing. Mm-hmm. That matter, either there's a streamer.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, even you're not doing half. I mean, if you watch the damn fly and don't do it at your feet where there's no current, I mean, that does a lot of crazy shit. You can make one go, you can actually vertical jig at your feet.
When I took my parents up to that cutthroat place, I was having them throw streamers upstream and bring them back down. And they're, you know, my dad streamer fishes a lot, but he does a lot more like kind of swinging and rope. He does a lot of like rod tip jigging after, you know, your influence. But he doesn't do a ton of upstream bringing it back down. And we're doing that. And I'm like, hey, watch your fly. You're not doing anything to it. You're just playing catch up.
That thing's just catching up if you're lucky.
And it's amazing. Like, that's why we talk about fishing white flies. Go watch it and then figure out, you realize like, oh, it's basically dead drifting downstream and I'm catching up to it.
Yeah. What Braden's talking about is we always in the seminars that we do in our streamer schools, and I've said it on a lot of tying videos, we do not practice fishing. Mm-hmm. We fish with the intent of catching, but we're not out doing things like do, just like with fly time. We tie the fly, get to the front where everybody always screws it up and just go, keep going.
Kyler was ripping me for tying the same fly. He goes, what, are you ever going to fish one of these? I said, dude, I'm practicing. I'm trying to get better at tying them.
Yeah, well, just go to the head. And just do heads, right? And that's all.
Be better at that.
And on streamer fishing, I tell people that just take a white fly and cut the damn hook off of it. Because men in particular have zero. They just don't listen. We don't do any. We just go. So if you tell them there's not a fish in here, they'll throw out and they'll just go pull the rope and do what they've ever. They'll just start fishing. Go out, take a number two woolly sculpin and white, cut the hook off of it, and see if you can animate the fly 30 feet from you. Watch the fly. 30 feet's a long ways to see a fish or see a fly, and just see what you can do with that fly. And then go really short on an upstream run, and I'd say 20 feet would be plenty.
From you.
Yeah, 20 feet,
everything. That's throwing 11 feet of line.
Yeah.
Including your leader.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and see how much you can do to the fly. Right. See how long it takes you to animate that fly. By the time you catch up with it, most people, that the fly's been dead drifting the entire time, it's at their feet and they're doing them shitty casts, they pick it all up and go, oh, crap. And then it's like, okay, now imagine if that was an articulated fly, it's folded right over on itself. Yeah. So you're not doing shit, right? And even in a pretty slow river, I mean, that's an advantage. Here, you're screwed, right? That's why we always say to three to 6 feet of retrieve, really, is all you're getting. And then you got to start over. But we just don't practice. And there's, I said it in so many of these things about, usually it's about knots when I get on this tangent, that this loop knot is going to make your fly go up and down. Again, totally defying physics. It's not, how does it do that?
You know how does it go up and down? I've seen you catch on a Davy knot.
I know, there's no difference. You still got to bend the damn leader, right?
Yeah.
Which is another 12 pound, for God's sakes.
Right.
Mono,
yeah.
Which is a floating thing. I mean, it's neutral buoyancy, but it's what you can do, and we just don't practice. You don't see... You seldom see someone just go out and say, they just don't want to take the time and to learn to animate the fly, but do it with a white fly, cut the hook off so you don't think you can. If the hook's on, you will not listen to your own brain.
Right.
You'll just throw that son of a bitch out there, and man, you'll just try to catch a fish. I did a seminar up between lakes one day with eight guys. I'll never do another on-river seminar in my life because of this. I might do it with chicks because they listen. Men, ears are just tools to hang something off of. I don't know why we've got the damn things. I waded up and down in front of this. It was like 15 years ago. I waded, and we were in, it was down by the, it was down by the lower end below the big rock. And I waded up and down in front of them like five times. Finally, I says, is anybody curious what I'm doing? Yeah, what are you doing? I says, well, there's no fish here anyway. It's all gravel. You could see them if they were here. And I just want you to be sure that there's nothing here and I've spooked anything that might be here. All right, so we're going to go out and we're going to cast. We're going to learn to jerk strip the fly. I swear to you, every single one of them threw it out, bent over a little bit, and just started pulling the rope as fast as they could. Completely, no one heard one word. And I'd go up fine. I'd go to one guy every time. So, okay, let's slow down. Let's do this. Time I got to the eighth guy, turn around. The seventh guy was already pulling the rope and just not even thinking about what we're doing. Not practicing the retrieves. Just they're just innate. They just had to fish.
Right.
But they had hooks on.
Yeah.
And so I felt like doing it with just yarn on the end of the leader, right? Just so they could see it. But we're just not good at practicing. But if you will do that, or if you're a swing cat, you need to go watch what your flies, you'll figure out things that you can do, particularly shorter range. But when you get out there 100 feet, the thought of what you're doing to that fly is virtually nothing.
Yeah.
Which I think they like to eat it that way, but I mean.
The running thin mono, I think, helps a lot when you can lift it off the water. So it's essentially like you're fishing at 30 feet. Right, because you have this direct connection. You take out that 70 feet, right? When you have, and obviously there's a little slack in that stuff, but it's so light, it's sort of like the Euro nymphing, right? Where you're tight to your flies, where you're tight to your shooting head. Now, your shooting head's 15, 17, 20 feet. You've got you're running a tip and then a leader off that, so you've got a 40-foot system out there, but when you throw it up and you kind of crossing big water, you can pop it. And like, I've done it with white flies and I see that fly move. Now, I don't think it's dropping, but I know
you can pull it forward.
There's some animation there.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
It's possible.
You can, I mean, yeah. I would just pull on the rod. I'd go like this, but usually I was running heads. So you're not animating anything that 30 foot of head's underwater.
Right.
But even if I was grease lining or dry, now, dry, that's a whole different world. Mm. I mean, you can completely ruin a dry run by waking too fast, or, you know, that's the whole art of swinging a fly. And that, obviously, but everything's on the surface, right? All you really can do, though, when you think about it, is speed it up a little bit. You can put more belly in it and accentuate that V and speed your fly, or you can pick it up and speed your fly.
Right.
But that's all you can do to it. Speed it or slow it.
Right. Yeah.
And slow is really hard once you get it set, you know. You gotta have it, you gotta be static. Just coming across this way. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I wish you would just go and I'll go upstream and hold the rod and do what you tell me to. Yeah. And you watch the fly.
We should go
film it. We really should do it with both, because it is really hard to change. Perception until you see it happening.
Right.
And when I said I was fishing, you know what a popsicle fly is?
Yeah.
It's just marabou, right? Three colors of marabou.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Purple, pink, and yellow.
And here it comes and it's wiggling across and you pilk at it.
I don't know why I'm pretending I knew what that is. I just Googled it like 10 minutes ago.
Well, you know it.
I know now.
So there you go. That's the difference.
The power of the internet. All right. So the last thing I want to say about the white fly, and we've talked about this before, but I think it's valuable. When it lands, no matter what angle you're at, it shows you how much you have to do to actually get that fly to move upon landing. We talk about the importance of that fly lands and moves immediately. You throw that white fly, well, then you realize the importance of casting, be able to lay your line out relatively flat or straight. Because if you throw a big pile, it's like six strips before that fly moves.
And it's wasted the whole thing.
I mean, you might get one to suicide itself on it, but
it's going to do that immediately. It's going to hit the water. And
they're going to go blow it up.
I mean, this is, and streamers is what we're taught, or I'm not sure, but I saw Mike Craig catch a really big steelhead once when he was learning to spay cast, and he shot the thing straight in the air. Excuse me. And it came straight down into the line. It was a really, I don't know how it went straight up.
And it's called a blown anchor.
And it comes down and it's making these huge loops, like 5 or 6 feet, but they're like, you're perfectly, it's like you were setting it up to cast.
Yeah.
Right. But his fly hit, in the middle of them. It was a Babine special, giant orange fly, and dirty. We're on the cliff, the top of the cliff pool on the Dean. And I'm sitting there and I'm looking and I'm thinking, how the hell? It's like he had a sinker on his fly.
Yeah.
Because the line's going through them. It's right in the middle of those loops. And it's really hauling ass. I'm thinking, it's not that fast there. Somehow it's got caught. It is. It's caught in a freaking steelhead's mouth. and it's zooming line out of the pool. It's like, boom, he's got this fish. That
sandwich
had to be from me to your computer.
Yeah.
The fish had to be, it was dirty water.
Yeah.
But, so it can go down a little bit, but I don't know where I'm going with that thing. But the, was pretty cool. Talked to Mike today. Go out and look at it. Go out and just, we should do it. We'll go.
Yeah.
When we go up to the mow or someplace where it's really big,
we
should film that. Just see what we can do.
Yeah. Just see what happens.
And maybe you've got some new thing with your shit that it'll work for you.
I'm trying to develop new big streamer spay rod methods, mostly because I like throwing spay rods and I like throwing big streamers. And I mean, I put a lot of time into it and I got some fish. I've not caught a big fish doing it. And all my biggest swing fish are on smaller flies, kind of doing traditional methods. I've got some nice fish in that 18, 20 range.
Speaking of that smaller fly,
but
I think, have we talked about this mini thing?
We mentioned it last week, and of course, I'm sure Johnny wanted to kill me. It was not online when we mentioned it.
Well,
we had him
Johnny,
in, we're still taking photos, so Johnny.
I'm going to talk, because I think, I didn't know we were going to talk space stuff, but I think that this micro, I have two of them here.
I'm really excited to fish that micro.
Nancy?
Yeah.
That thing's going to rock. So this is a mini.
Here, can I get some photos of those?
When these things started, hold on, Braden's being a pain making me.
You can't talk and hold something at the same time.
So when we started with this, like a Nancy P, this crayfish pattern, this fly.
Why is it called that?
It's my only political statement. You want to know. That's not my only
political statement.
The only one I've mentioned tonight.
Yeah.
But
the only one in the last 3 minutes.
This fly, the small version, was about as big as this piece of cardboard.
Yeah.
Right? And then we minied it and now microed it. I said something last week when talking to Matt when he was trying to decide what fly. I says, when you're in doubt, go smaller. Don't go bigger. I mean, that seems to be a theory in streamer fishing in particular, where you just, it's like nothing's working. So you just say, I'll just put on the most obnoxious giant thing.
That's when I go to the white flathead.
Yeah. You should go small.
Right.
I mean, and so I'm really excited about these things. They're going to be, in particular, this bay world. Now, if I thought something could pulse, it would be a fly that size. You might give it, at least you could pull it, and in particular the Nancy, its legs are going to puff out. And win, right?
Right.
And so it's a, even the libtards laughing at it. So the mini Nancy for me has, in the very little I've fished it,
or the micro.
No, the mini.
Oh, the mini, yeah.
Is outfished the other ones.
So is that so that's the six, mini, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I fished that
four
one
and two.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they come 5 inches long.
Right.
But I've had some spectacular.
That's a heavy, big fly.
Yeah.
With all that bunny in there.
I like the next size down better.
Yeah.
But I've had some pretty good days on the giant ones. But again, it's the same shit. When you just don't go big. If things are bad, go smaller. Go scale it down and go for a more food-oriented bite. And that's what I think these micros, and I don't know, we got mini micro dungeons, Nancy's and Envy's, I think. Is there another one?
Really Dungeons, Envy's, Nancy's, Boogies.
Boogies.
Yeah. Boogies are coming. Yeah, I don't think Boogies. We have them yet.
Yeah, they're not in stock yet.
Yeah, but these are, they'll all be stock on.
Stock wise, I think we have those three.
Yeah, and like those are going to be killers. I mean, it's just such a good bug, and now it's in a. You could throw it on a four weight
and
size.
And I'll have to go home and bleach my face and mouth, but for the Eurocats, that's going to be a really good.
Oh, it's going to be so good.
It's going to be money.
So if you, I mean, I, and then all the guys that fish cutthroat streams,
mm-hmm.
just bring a little glass rod and throw those things. I mean, they're going to be killers.
It's a hoot.
Brook trout streams. I mean, all this stuff. If you like fishing streamers, you can really play small ball with them. I mean, little fish can eat those. Big fish will eat them too.
They have no problem.
Yeah. All right. I got another question. This one is from, where'd it go? It's gone. Levi Olson on Instagram. He sent me two questions. The one I really wanted to talk about was, Kelly talks about landing fish in less than 30 seconds, and it shouldn't take very long at all. I feel like sometimes I have to fight a fish for quite a while in fear of it snapping off. So how does Kelly land his fish so quickly? I'm mostly wade fishing, which means I'm fighting the current, pulling them in. Does he have a process on how he gets it done so quick? Where is he, or is he just using 15-pound tippet and dragging those fish in? Ha ha, thanks, man. Love the podcast. Been grinding away. Levi, before you get into this, I just want to mention real quick, and I know I mentioned at the beginning of the show, our first episode of the second season of The Fly Show came out last Friday when you're listening to this. It's tomorrow for us right now. Hopefully it's well-received. I really enjoyed it. The Henry's Fork one.
Yeah.
Super cool. Jake got a couple fish. And if you watch, I mean, Kelly got a really good fish in there. And that thing dogged him. I mean, it went down. Kelly's pulling on it. You can actually see there's one shot where his rod is almost straight. Like, there's a bend down low, but he's not, you know, nancying that fish. Now, with Jake's, you can see.
Nancying?
Yeah. You know, sallying those fish.
Got it.
With a couple of the fish Jake caught, you can actually see the entire fight because he gets that fish's head up so fast.
Yeah.
And they weren't as big as your fish. But his rod is absolutely corked, and he just drags them in.
Yeah,
because he's fishing 12-pound.
That helps. I mean, there's three things in fishing. There's three variables. You have line strength. Well, there's four. There's line strength. There's rod strength, and then there's hook strength, and then there's flesh strength. Right.
Yep.
So, obviously, you can your line. You know, the weak link in there should be your line.
Your tippet, the last section.
Yeah, that should be the weak link. Because if you could just, otherwise, the next thing would be your rod, right? You don't want the rod breaking because you're, in particular, when we're fishing streamers. But dry fly, it's the same thing. It's a little more complicated in the respect that you can, as he said, cork a streamer rod. And you can turn it and
that's what, bending a rod down.
Just getting it right where you could feel it in your hand. But first you have to understand that you cannot, there's a give and a take in all fish fighting. And so, but the key to good fish fighting is understanding if you stand there and just kind of freeze up and you're like, oh, I got a big one, you're in trouble. You're not there yet. If you realize the only thing you can do is accentuate the turn of the fish's head. And when you understand that if the fish is going away from you, you lose. And you have to do something. And so that's a lose point. You can't just pull on it. That's what we were talking about earlier with Harry Lemire when he said, when I asked him about the reels, what do you do? And he says, well, young man, what happens when you put drag on a fish? And I said, I reel them in. He goes, no, you don't. The fish turns downstream and goes away from you. And that's what they all do. So if the fish goes downstream and you're on the this side, you know, you're on the river right side, the river's going down to your right. And if it gets below, you've got to do everything you can to continue a circle. That's all you can do with a fish. He's got to continue a circle and turn his head. And it doesn't matter if he goes up, you've got to turn it in. But you have to play the game of to continue the turn and make up line in a hurry, right? And whether you're stripping line in or you're reeling, I don't care. it's hard to reel in that much line, but you have to continue that turn and you have to be cognizant of what happened out on the river. You have to understand if the fish is turning to his right, you got to make a big arc and complete that arc. And the more you do and you keep coming back towards the boat or the bank, you have to, every time it does something, because it's going to come around in a circle. And remember, the fish does not know that you are the problem. They are not afraid. They don't have any clue that you're why they're something.
They probably have no idea what's going on.
They have no idea. They're running away from the pull in their mouth. So that's why when a fish gets below you in current and you keep pulling, it's going to fight harder to go downstream, path of least resistance. And so you continue that. When it goes below you, you have two options. Continue pull, run, well, three. You can run like hell. But if you can free line, get so the fish doesn't feel you pulling against its mouth when it's below you, by running, giving it line however you can, it will turn around. It will turn around immediately. As soon as it doesn't feel it, it's going to turn around, and then the line will be behind it, and it'll run from that. And if you're hip to it and you don't put any pressure on it, the fish will swim past you. And it'll always swim right in front of you because your rod's hanging here, your line's tight, and it's behind the fish that swims up to you. That one's hard for most people to get, but we've got videos doing it. It's an old tech. Yeah. Believe it's an old steelhead technique. But it works. And so, but it doesn't matter. It's still got to come up. You still got to finish the fight. You finish the fight.
We had it on video in that nymphing video with Johnny.
And it took like 2 minutes for the fish to swim up, but it swam up to my feet.
Rocketed down. I mean, it was a long ways downstream.
And it was a good fish.
He just took the pressure off it. Yeah. We thought it was him.
Yeah.
It might've been hooked in the stomach.
Not that one.
It was.
Not when he went out though.
Was that?
Not when he took off. I don't think. It might've came out.
It was
later,
like I think 19 inch female.
Yeah. But it doesn't matter where they're hooked. They're swimming from the.
They're swimming away from the pole. From so all of a sudden that pole gets below them, they swim upstream.
But that's a really hard one to get people to understand.
Yeah.
If you can remember nothing else about putting a fish in quick, most people pick the rod up, bad habit. You never let your hands, when your elbows are hanging down, this is where you fight. You don't fight your fish.
Well, then you're using your big muscles. You're using your back muscles, your legs.
And you can turn your rod into the fish and cork it, get the bend in the butt of the rod. Everybody wants to bend their whole rod and bend it in at the rear end first. And we kind of tend to do this. And what happens when people pick their hand up, the rod goes down. Right? And their hand goes up and down, all hell's breaking loose. There's no way you can watch what that fish's head's doing. Mm-mm. And most people don't really even look. They're kind of, it's the fun part, right? It should be what you're there to reel the fish in. But people get really tight when they've got a fish on. And their fun factor goes to shit. They're just like, I gotta reel the fish in,
Shit.
And they kind of freeze a lot. Or they pick their arms too high. I don't know who started this shit. You know, get your rod up. Dumbest thing on earth. Fight your rod in front of you. You're right in front of your chest. Don't let it go anywhere. And just angle the rod. And then continue the arc of the fish. Fish starts to go left. Just accentuate it and make up line as fast as you can. And continuously trying to get its head to come to shore. The more times you break that rhythm, it's going to go around. They're going to continue. But you got to learn to turn. Every time its head turns to you, you've got to accentuate it.
Right.
And when you're good at it, you will. I mean, a 1 minute fish fight is an eternity. And I must hear it 15 times a day. I fought that thing for 15 minutes. That's like dead fish. It's just...
Your freaking arm is exhausted.
Most of the time it is 2 minutes, but they think it's 15. And it's just one of those things. It's something that just goes with our culture that I fought it. There's another one. I don't like that one. I thought it was a rock and then it swam away. Nate has a great line for that. It's a fish until it's not. Don't sit there.
I thought that was a Chinese line.
Is it?
I thought so.
Well, I hope so.
Because
I'd rather Nate.
I told that story of going over and I had hit a rock twice in a row. And then I got slammed and then it just didn't move. And I thought it was a rock. And I tell Johnny that and he like That kind of flipped out at me. He's like,
yeah, it's kind
it's
of
it's not a rock. Thing. It's never a rock.
It's not a rock till it's a rock.
And then I thought it was the one, and it was a 19-inch female hooked in the stomach.
And then they can wrap around shit too, but all that. But to fight the fish well, you have to understand you have to continue a movement.
Right.
And if it's going straight upstream, let it. It's just beating itself up. Let it run. Yeah. Right. And remember, it's a fight. We say it's, I have pictures in my seminar of a fish fighting Popeye or somebody, or no, it was Wimpy. And it was it's called a fight just like you were in a fight. You don't just win a fight. You know, if you did, boxing and kickboxing and all the rest of it would be really short term.
Right.
Here we go. They're on. Okay. He wins. Well, that's not really how it works. Right. And so, and there's a win and a lose in it when you're in a ring. You know, you're in a defensive spot, you're doing things, you're feeling things out. Same thing when you're fishing. Fish is going somewhere, pay attention. Don't just stand there and like think, reel in, reel in, reel in. What the hell's it doing? And you by the way, it's supposed to be the fun part, you know, make it happen. And so continue the arc, whatever it's doing, get it close to shore. Every time it comes around its arc, lift its head up. That makes it hard for it to dig. And they have, when they're digging with their head down, that's when they get to use the force of the river against you. If their head's up, it only has one option with its head up, down.
Yeah.
It's got to come up and it's got to get its head back down. And that's towards the bottom. That's, you know, with the water pressure's pushing on their bellies when their heads are up. That's not a good thing for the fish. He doesn't have the momentum and the power. So you turn its head again. When you get used to seeing its head come up and turning the rod, bending it over, dropping your rod down to get its head to come around that circle, and as soon as it comes around the circle, it pisses his head back up, so he's in a poor defensive position, it just happens very quickly.
Yeah.
I mean, very quickly. So, but you can't do that if all you do is stand there
and
reel and freeze up. I mean, I've seen people with their rods literally... They'll set up on a fish, fish will be in front of them, and they'll be like this, and all of a sudden the rod will turn sideways. They have no idea the freaking fish has went 30 feet downstream, and all of a sudden the rod gets pulled sideways, yeah. And they go, oh, and they go like this, right? And they're just turning, but they're not.
They're never going to make a game-winning free throw.
You have to look at the line and pay attention to where the line, not at your rod. Don't ever look at your rod, ever. Never, ever, ever, ever. Your hands are in front of you. Look where the line's going in the water. Anticipate if the fish is going to jump. See what it's doing. Look where the line's going and try to anticipate where it's went.
Yeah.
But you can't do that. And most people listen to us talking about shit. I've seen Johnny put 20-inch fish. I mean, seems like seconds, like 10 yeah. seconds max.
I used to talk about Matt and I when we're fishing the wade stretch, right? We're fishing at such a short distance. But we were so finely tuned. We fished together so much that, like, one of us would hook a fish, and I swear to God, our average land time was under 7 seconds.
Because it's just done right.
You hook that fish in the top of the column and you just yank them straight in.
Yeah.
And when you're fishing 12-pound test, you can do that. I think the caveat is that when you're fishing light tippet, you know, 3, 4, 5, even 6X in some places, you need to make up ground when the fish gives it to you. You know, you have to let that fish run, otherwise you'll break it off. And now, when they give you a shot, you need to make it.
On light tippet, people still don't get the fact that they need to bend the rod at their hand. Yeah. You get your rod over your head and all this goes away and there's a stiff, you know, it's a long plane. You fight the rod. The rod is designed to be a casting and a fighting tool.
It's a shock absorption.
Yeah, it's
right?
Sucking all that energy out of that pull when it goes boom like that. Thump. And you can't do that. In particular, when people get their rods up, it goes into they continuously drop their rod tips at their fish.
Yeah.
And then they do this stuff and it's going up and down and up and down. There's no composure. And that's the hardest thing is it's the composure to do what's right and be thinking ahead of time. I bet when we look at this, at our footage, it's all on a timer. I bet if we look at how many fish, I'll bet it's rare that we have a 1 minute fight.
Yeah. In that show that just came out, you said, it's actually kind of funny. You said, I didn't fight that fish long at all. It was probably a minute. That's actually a really long time.
Yeah.
Which,
that's a long time.
And that was a huge brown, and it fought very hard.
That fish dug in.
It dug its head down.
I was pulling as hard as I could
against
it. Like
I said, you saw, and okay, so this is something I'm going to mention. I'm a very casual, I'm like the epitome of a casual UFC fan, right? We used to watch boxing or UFC when we were pre-gaming, pre-games in college. Just all the guys sit down on the couch and watch fights. Now, that is the extent of my knowledge about fighting, obviously. and the most powerful punches, kicks, everything, they come from a very compact area, right? It's all, it's legs and, you know, it's lower body. And then, you know, nobody has their arm way out here or way up here, right?
It's not for long.
Not for long. It's in tight, right? And like your power zones, your core, your hamstrings and your glutes. I remember watching Andy Mill talk about fighting tarpon. And he says, your arms are so weak compared to your ass and your hamstrings and your quads. Like, that's where your power is. So he plants that rod against his hip, and he pulls with his legs and then reels in. Mm-hmm. That's how he doesn't, you know, take forever to fight tarpon. He pulls as hard as he can on him. Now he knows how hard he can pull. He trained to do that. Mm-hmm. But if you watch Kelly fight fish, his arm is not up high. Yeah. It's not, he doesn't have this massive bend in his rod when he's fishing appropriate tippet, right? When he doesn't need that massive amount of shock absorption, he's almost pointing at the thing, just a little bit of bend in the bottom of that rod, and that is his shock absorption, and it's a really powerful pull.
Well, like I said, when you're on, first of all, like I said, it's called a fight for a reason. The box, if you're fighting, your elbows are in, and you're, that's your core, right?
Yeah.
You don't fight with your hands over your head. And same with, you're fighting a fish, right? And all your power comes from your feet and your legs, and, you know, you're locking in on it. But mostly you have to understand what the fish, it doesn't matter, you have all the core things on earth. If you get in the ring with somebody that it's moving, the other person's moving, right? You have to anticipate.
Shadow
that's
boxing.
The whole idea of sparring and fighting, that you, and you learn to get comfortable with what the hands coming or feet at you or whatever it is. But with a fish, it's what I was just saying. You have to get comfortable with knowing what the fish is doing. If you, there's a thing called a blink reflex when you fight. And people that do that and close their eyes all the time, it's really hard to fix. And it's really hard for people to fight a fish when all they do is put their hands here and freeze up on the reel.
Right.
And they don't learn to, the fish is running and you can anticipate a movement with the fish. They're not, you're not anticipating what your fish is doing. You're just standing there. Or God help you if you're the guy that starts screaming, get the net. God, I hate that. No net. No net.
There was a time in my life
net.
I was
get
that
the
guy.
Net. Get the net. Well, you need to, when that's another thing about fighting fish. The angler, unless you're being guided, then they'll tell you drop your rod. But the angler tells the person with the net when to net the fish.
Yes.
But that doesn't start the second you hook it.
Right.
It means the last 2 seconds of this thing, you've got control and you steer the head into the net.
You get that head up.
You put right. the head in the net. And when that fish's head is coming towards the net and you say net him, that person's supposed to scoop and make a real move. No, you don't net the tail of a fish.
We're not going to mention it, but we've got a show coming out where there was a bit of a gaffe. All right.
You got to drop it. So, yeah, but the key to fighting fish is, it's like fighting.
It's not a static engagement. I mean, it's an active thing.
It's 100%.
It's the most fun part. I mean, I like to eat.
But most people just freeze on it. But it's if you can think of nothing else, just think of how do you complete the circle. Yeah. It's going one way away from you. How do you make it come back in a full circle?
Now, is this,
so it heads back up.
Would you say that dynamic is mostly important when you're within 15 feet of the fish, 20 feet of the fish? I mean, just
like
at distance.
There's a win and a lose in all fights.
Right.
If you're in the corner and you're getting your ass beat, you better know how to cover, right? If you're out there and the fish is 50 feet from you, you can't do shit anyway. Yeah. He has to turn around.
Right.
But it doesn't hurt but if he's out like there.
Angling thing, when do you think that comes into play? At what
the
distance?
Second you can turn ahead. If it's 50 feet and it starts a big circle, you're in a lake, I don't care.
Yeah.
And it's a big whatever, you got to continue that circle. Mm-hmm. And it's the further out they are. There was this video once, and I don't want to mention the name, but the person said, to flop your rod back and forth and confuse the fish. This is a very famous angler, right? And I've used that 100 times in seminars saying, the only thing confused is the person talking. Because if you go out, this one anybody on earth can do, go out and hold the fly by the hook, not the point, by the bend of the hook, and 50 feet or 30 feet for that matter, 20 feet for that matter. And you hold that hook in your hand, pointing at the angler, and have them do these massive swing things with their rod. You know what your fins do? Nothing. It goes like this. It does nothing to think of what's happening. How far away from you?
It's the angle, right? So that's what I mean is
you got to have a big arc.
If you're
at 50
feet, you think about the triangle that's drawn, right? Between rod tip to the right, rod tip to the left, and then the actual angle that it would meet at the... Yeah,
at the fly.
At a long ways away, that's like a 3-degree
angle. Other words, the fly might be wiggling.
Yeah.
Not really. It's just because it's just because you got slack in between there somewhere.
Now at 8 feet away from you, it's an obtuse triangle at that point. Then that changing angle is really awesome. So that's...
But you have to understand, you got to continue the arc of the fish.
Right.
It swims in a sea. Predator fish swim in, Cs. They don't swim in Ss. So they come around and you got to continue that.
Interesting. And that's something we could do a whole nother podcast on because I've heard you talk about that before.
It's a defense thing for visual too, but it's also just when they grow up. Baby predators swim in seas. All prey fish that are being preyed upon swim in a sea where they go like this, or I mean an S, excuse me, where they reflect light and they do that. And a big fish swims slower in a longer arc, so it's not as detectable.
Interesting.
In any direction, and it's also how they fight.
Yeah.
And so you just have to, it's so easy to say. I remember I used to fight with this guy and he had this terrible blink reflex and he just closed his eyes. You could move to one side and be like this still. And I said, you just need to practice more. You just need to get in there and practice and get used to it. But when we're fishing, it's not uncommon for people to catch a fish or two a day. When they're out, just when they begin, it's pretty hard to practice that.
Yeah.
So if you can go, I've said this forever, you teach people, kids in particular, anybody, if you can get a bluegill pond with spawning bluegills, am I boring you? You're sleeping.
No, I'm tired, but it's not you boring me. I'm very interested.
You're boring me. So when you fish bluegills, you get a spot that they're spawning on, and they have a perfect, you can top water them. Mm-hmm. And proportionately, they're like a freaking GT compared to a trout. I mean, they get sideways, but you get to practice the same thing. They swim away and you go like this, and all of a sudden, that big fat little bluegill like this turns at you and he's weightless.
Yeah.
And he comes straight to you because same thing with a trout. When he goes away from you and turns, if it's downstream, better for you because his head's going this way, and he's being forced down, you continue that arc. It's a little harder when they're going upstream. You got to catch it at the right time to turn their head to bring them this way. But then they make a really big move at you because they're coming downstream.
So if you don't have a bluegill pond nearby, get a 10 weight and hook it up to your kid or dog and have them run around and practice that.
Yeah, hook them in the mouth. Because they're going to run from the pole.
Put a harness on them. Put a harness on them. No hooks. Put a harness on them. Yeah, they're going to run from the pole. They're going to run at the pole.
Yeah, exactly.
I did this the other day. I saw this doing
his kid.
No, sorry, that's a good point. It's a minor topic change. I did this the other day, spay fishing. I'm throwing this long belly line now, right? Which is, it's a 57 foot head. I've got a 17 foot leader. So when I want to check my leader for knots, it's kind of pain in the ass, right? So I do this big like snap move and land it on my rod and then grab my leader. So it cuts out a minute of stripping or 30 seconds, whatever. Well, I went to grab my fly. I mishandled it. I was in a really fast run. That's a 57-foot thick, I'm bending a 10, 11 weight, 15 yeah. footer with it. That's a lot of water pressure on that line. Well, I mishandled it and dug that hook into my finger. And my instinct.
Chase the line?
I ran towards it to get the pressure off. Yeah. I was like, oh, fuck. And then, you know, my first thing I did was I stopped and looked around to see if anybody saw that.
Yeah, exactly.
I was so embarrassed.
You should have been.
Yeah.
You'd be more embarrassed from telling anybody.
Yeah. You know, honesty, vulnerability is important, right? That's why the other thing I was going to tell you.
Prey and predator.
Kelly does a 13-minute meditation every day.
Since I was 21.
Well, I figured out I could never get into this meditative state, but I figured out how to take a 13-minute nap. I've got this down to a routine.
I don't think
you're going to like it.
Go ahead.
I eat somewhere between 8 and 14 Oreos, and I get a sugar high, and then I just fucking violently crash. And then I pull my car over to the side of the road, and I sleep. And I sleep for, you know, 10, 15 minutes, and I get up and I keep driving. So you and me.
Not exactly Mike Dayton's techniques, but.
You and me were not that different, Kelly.
Oh, no. Are we ever. But you keep telling me.
All right, you got anything else? Should we wrap this thing up?
What's behind the desk? I do have a cool one.
Oh, yeah,
I think it's just funny. My buddy Patrick sent me this along with a vintage bottle of bourbon or whiskey. I just think this is freaking hilarious.
I'm going to get a photo. This was good.
This took effort.
We got a good chuckle out of this.
Yeah. So this is because I make so much fun, even though I fish damn things all the time.
For those listening, he's got a box that says Kelly's Perdigon box on top.
And it's got all my Perdigons in it. Does have really, I don't know if he tied those. They're really
very clean.
They're very clean.
Cool. I would say those are the most soulful Perdigons I've seen.
But it now gets a place up here where Kelly's Perdigon box. Right over there. Very cool. Thank you. This is like great gift day.
This is a good gift day, for sure. Thanks, Alex, again for this.
You bet. Thank you. Hope you guys liked it. Hope it helps you out.